Welcome to the Near Post Local, football and futsal in the capital region, where too much football or futsal is never likely to be enough. I'm Peter Funnell. In this program, we speak to Heather Reid, CEO Capital Football. We look at the current state of activities at Capital Football and within the Capital Football region, and look forward into 2012. I think you'll be astonished at the range and rate of activity that is presently to hand with football, football development, and futsal. This is part one of that interview. I commence this interview slightly out of sequence. It begins with the CEO's explanation of the situation as it currently exists between Capital Football and Canberra FC, following the unacceptable behaviour of a small group of Canberra FC supporters at the Men's Premier League Grand Final, which saw Capital Football issue Canberra FC with a breach notice. Now, we'll listen to this bit first, and then we'll get on to the rest of the interview proper, and it covers a significant range of matters. It covers off on the entry of the AIS into our Premier League men's competition in 2012, linked as it will be to ACTAS. That's a significant advancement in terms of the development of our most talented players here in the ACT. We speak about the women's Premier League competition for 2012, and there's a fair amount of movement in women's football at the Premier League end. Then it's on to futsal. There are a lot of things to consider in futsal at the moment, not the least of which is the selection and preparation of teams for the FFA National Championships in early January. And there's a plethora of other opportunities that affect players, and we only have one small pot of players. At the present moment, it's not uncommon for some of our best players to find themselves being pulled in several directions at once. This requires very careful coordination at the Capital Football end and first-rate communication with parents and players. Is that the situation at the moment? Well, possibly not, but I do recommend you listen to the CEO on this one. And when you're finished listening to this interview, go to part two. There's a lot more to listen to. Over to the CEO, Capital Football. Okay, look, we're going to cover, if you're in agreement, we'll cover sensitive issue, the men's grand final and the aftermath of that. Now, certainly on the Near Post Local, made it very clear that what happened in terms of a section of the Canberra FC supporters was just appalling and not as it should have been. And all that went with that, it came as no surprise Capital Football took disciplinary action. And of course that process is wherever it's at. We had two spectacular teams. For me, it promised to be the game of the decade, that Premier League club level. And every game before it indicated that's exactly the way it would be. The game was spectacular for various reasons, not least of which was massively high scoring rate. That came as a surprise. But the behaviour of some of the Canberra FC supporter group, small group, just was not appropriate to the occasion. You and the board must, and your staff, must have been very concerned for that.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a sensitive issue that I'm not really at liberty to say too much about for legal reasons.
Yeah.
I just would say that it was a great day with four games, remember, because we started very early in the day with the under-16s at 10 o'clock.
That was a good game.
Leading up to, well, four great games, I think, leading up to the grand final of the Men's Premier League, which, as you say, was a terrific game. But it's fair to say that throughout the day there were a number of matters that were not very conducive to making sure that everybody was going to enjoy that final day, that final game. And now, of course, those matters, which have been aired in the media, I'm not sure if all of the facts from our point of view are properly in the in the marketplace, but that's a communication issue. The club officials were warned throughout the day about the potential for breaches of code of conduct, breaches of men's league regulations, and breaches of other FFA disciplinary matters. To say that what happened on the day is now history is correct in on one hand, but on the other hand, we have to go through a disciplinary process.
Mm.
We initiated the first breach notice to Canberra FC within the week following the incident. They engaged lawyers to deal with the matter on their behalf, and so our men's league manager has been liaising with those lawyers and also with FFA on the potential of the breaches. We subsequently withdrew the first breach notice and on advice from FFA particularly, and have restructured the breach notice so that it is clearer in terms of what areas of the code of conduct and the disciplinary regulations were breached.
Okay.
We allege were breached.
Yep.
The matter is set down for a hearing next Wednesday, the 26th.
Whereabouts?
At Capital Football.
Right.
And I have to say I was disappointed that there was a group of people within a particular community that were attempting to stage a protest when we convened the first disciplinary matter, the first disciplinary hearing. And I hope that doesn't happen. I hope that people within the Canberra FC community have quietened down certain elements and that this can continue to be dealt with, as we always wanted it to be dealt with, through the proper disciplinary regulations.
As it must be.
Bearing in mind that we're also dealing with lawyers who are acting on their behalf. So we have the hearing set down for next Wednesday, subject to anything happening in the meantime. If they say they haven't got sufficient time to prepare their case, then that hearing will be held by an independent panel of tribunal members, fully legally qualified. And we've also issued a breach notice for one player who was a spectator on the day that, on all the evidence from the incident reports, was clearly involved in a number of breaches during the day, and Canberra FC has an opportunity to respond to what might be the appropriate action to be taken against him for the offences that he allegedly, well, in fact, I know he was involved in. This was a player that I was, you know, almost going to have evicted from the ground before the game, before the main game, but I was encouraged to allow him to stay in the venue
by
a Canberra FC official,
mm-hmm.
Who said that he would look after him and take care of him during the game, and that didn't happen. And this player was somebody who lit flares and carried a flare onto the pitch after the game.
Oh, okay, yeah.
There are other players and supporters that we probably could also invoke a breach notice against, but I'm not sure if we're going to go down that path at this stage. The men's league manager will deal with that.
Okay. Well, it's an ongoing matter.
It's an ongoing matter, and I probably can't say too much more
I don't think we need to say any more.
We have a disciplinary process that we are following. We want to complete that disciplinary process before we engage in anything further that might be required, such as mediation.
Mm.
I personally may want to have some mediated discussion with the Canberra FC key management,
yep.
Because I had, and I hope I still have, a very good relationship with those people, but I'm afraid that the events of the day have made it personally very disturbing for me and some of my staff as well. And so we need to perhaps mend some bridges,
yep.
Particularly when we want to continue using Deakin Stadium for our own local fixtures, but also because we have a Canberra United game scheduled there for the 10th of December.
Okay.
And I do not want any repetition or potential for trouble at that game.
Oh, absolutely.
It is an FFA event that will be running on their behalf, and so FFA will be closely watching also how things unfold on that day at that ground.
Mm.
And again, this this is not a threat, this is a reality, that with changes in the national competition structure and the potential for an FFA Cup competition to be introduced next year, and Canberra FC and Belconnen and Canberra Olympic and all of our top clubs wanting to be part of an FFA Cup preliminary round of games, Deakin would be ideal as a venue for those games, and we need to make sure that the risk management associated with that venue is assessed and dealt with, so that we don't have a repeat of what happened on that grand final day. That includes better security around the field, so people can't jump the fence and go onto the field.
Yeah.
Better security around the perimeter of the venue, so people can't drop items over the fence or get in a side gate.
Yeah.
Or indeed come onto the field as a streaker and run out another side gate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So the security of the venue needs to be a lot tighter than it was on that day.
Yeah, those incidents invite so many other things, don't they? By that I mean where you would not expect a problem. Some of these security issues are not at the forefront of anyone's mind. Mm. But once they emerge, you really can't walk backwards anymore.
It's a
problem, that, isn't it?
That becomes a resource issue and it becomes a finance issue.
Absolutely.
So whereas at McKellar we might have minimum security standards as per FFA regulations and W League regulations, I would expect that at Deakin, however, we will have to step up that. And it means, for example, I may have to have two security contract security staff patrolling the outside of the venue and at least 4 to 6 people inside the venue. Now, the security requirements for A-League and Youth League, A-League particularly, are very, very strict, very high.
Oh, yes.
And then they sort of taper that down to W-League and taper it even further down to Youth League. So, you know, in previous W-League games, we are required to have, I think, a minimum of 6 contract security.
Mm.
So that's at the gate, at the change room and tunnel area, and also on the field of play.
Yep.
So I would say we were wanting to trim that back because it's extremely expensive. You've got to have security people there for 3 hours from the time the gate opens to the time people leave, and that's expensive. So for the game at Deakin, I don't want to foreshadow too much. I hope that we get the full support from the Canberra FC managers of that facility, but we would have to have probably, I would say, 8 contract security plus our own volunteers and staff assisting on the day.
This is lamentable because this cost is borne ultimately by the football community here.
Well, I've got to raise more money. It's the Canberra United budget.
Yeah.
So it's Canberra United budget, which is supported by an ACT government grant, some terrific sponsorship now from Loop, the Rock Development Group, from ACTU-AGL, University of Canberra, the Tradies Clubs. And I want to get as many people through the gate so we can generate a bit more income, sell a few more shirts, that sort of stuff. But it does impact on our bottom line. And it may be an unnecessary impact, but it's an absolutely critical matter that we have to deal with properly.
And no one's looking for ways to spend more money.
Mm.
Yeah, are they really? And but
well, I'd rather have the money go to the players.
Yeah,
I'd rather have the money go
ridiculous.
Into buying some more merchandise to sell to the punters. But
and those are the consequences, bit by bit, of an incident such as we saw that day. But, you know, we're lucky here in the ACT. We won't see much of this, and hopefully we'll never see it ever again. Down in New South Wales, they locked 2 teams up in a sealed location in order to play their Premier League games because they had a riot 2 years ago.
And in Victoria, they have mounted police.
And they have mounted police. I mean,
I don't want that in Canberra.
No.
You know, I want to. We want to make sure that our games are presented in a family-friendly environment.
That's it. Yeah.
That is free of abuse and harassment. That is free of behaviour that turns people away.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, a lot of people left that game before half-time because it was not a family-friendly or a pleasant environment to be in.
This sort of behaviour can't be tolerated. It can't be let pass. And it's not reflective of the standard of football produced by the club concerned. We're talking to Heather Reid, CEO of Capital Football. The winter season has just concluded. Summer is underway. Football in summer. Who would have thought it a few years ago, but it's all there. Heather, how are you going?
Not too bad, Peter. Thanks for talking to me.
Right. Now, look, I think we need to read the listener into just how much football is going on. There is a clear changeover from summer to winter. Winter to summer. And, I mean, football doesn't stop, but the priorities, the adjustment and the nature of business does.
That's right.
How's it go?
Well, it's a full-on year. If we just do a little wrap-up of the winter season,
yep.
We're in the middle of a review of our junior league, just looking at some tweaking of rules and regulations and trying to fine-tune some of the structural aspects of the junior league, particularly around some of the boys' competitions as they feed into the pathway to men's Premier League.
Yeah, I want to get back to that, yeah.
So we're looking at that. We're also looking at maybe changing some of those age divisions at the 16, 17, 19 years to fit within the national competition review.
Yeah.
I suspect probably we won't make those changes in 2012, but we'll roll them out in 2013.
Mm.
We've just finished the review of the men's Premier League clubs and how they have travelled under the second year of their Premier League licence.
Mm.
And I can say that there's a recommendation that will go to the board that there won't be any change in 2012.
Mm.
We'll maintain the same clubs. That includes keeping Goulburn and Monaro and Cooma in the
good
competition.
Good.
We're looking at the inclusion of the AIS in the men's Premier League because the AIS would welcome some more competition throughout the winter months. Now that they're playing in the National Youth League in summer, they've got a bit more time to fit in some games during winter. And I think there's a general feeling that being part of our men's Premier League will also boost the quality of our men's Premier League.
Oh, yeah.
Although it's interesting, the news in the last few days about Gary Van Egmon leaving the AIS coaching ranks to go to Newcastle Jets, and also Jan Versleijen, whose contract is up this year. There's speculation he won't renew. So there could
be... It's pretty persistent speculation, isn't it?
Yes, and I mean, that means...
What's all that mean? I mean, losing the two coaches?
Yeah, look, it was a pretty clear laid-down misere, I think, that... Gary Van Egmon was going to go to the Jets. I mean, he's previously at the Jets, and I suspect that FFA were encouraging him to put his hand up.
And they sacked the coach
big
up
risk
there.
Yeah, a big risk leaving basically a government position at the AIS to then go into a tenuous kind of coaching position with an A-League club, but that's Gary's call. Jan, I think, look, that guy just does so much. He's the AIS coach, he's the under-20s coach, he's the under-17s coach. I don't think he was in the country very much, so it would take its toll. And I don't know if he's homesick and wants to go back to Holland, but if he doesn't continue, then there will be a lot of change at the AIS. So
I reckon he's a fabulous coach.
Yeah, I'm just flagging that this could have an impact on whether the AIS men's comes into our league or not. If there's a new coaching structure or workforce there, they may not want them to play, but that will unfold in the next few months. It's not urgent, because we can do a draw around a 10-team comp or indeed the 9-team comp. It's the same thing. So,
but under the present regime, or now almost dearly departed,
yes,
they want
to be in the league, and we just need to make sure that there is minimum disruption to the league if, for some reason, a large group of the AIS boys are involved in international commitments during the winter.
Mm.
We've already been talking with them about the ACTAS boys team being their underpinning squad and the capacity for ACTAS boys to play pathway as well as Premier League as part of that sort of joint club, AIS-ACTAS.
Yeah.
The other suggestion from FFA is that some players in other state institute programs could be sort of on call to be brought in to play for the AIS if there is a large slab of AIS players that are overseas on some activity.
Yeah.
So there's some flexibility within the regulations that FFA is leading in order to enable AIS to play. It's very much an FFA, AIS and Capital Football set of negotiations.
Because it's really important here that, very obviously, that if the AIS put their hand on their heart and say, we'll play in the Premier League, they've got to stump up with a team every scheduled game.
That's right. Or we at least need to know, if there are going to be 2 weeks that they're away, that they either forfeit those games or we reschedule the fixtures.
Right.
They won't. They will be participating for points, but the points means the games are more meaningful. But to them, it's not so much about, you know, sitting in the top of the table at the end of the league.
Yeah.
It's about getting more meaningful games to make sure that they've got 40-odd games in the year instead of, you know, maybe, you know, 23 or 25 or something. So we're also calling for nominations for the Women's Premier League. They're coming in. They close at the end of the month. And
How's that looking?
Look, I think it's pretty good. Obviously, there's a lot of rumour and speculation around.
Well,
there
is a bit of that, I can promise you.
we've got some strong interest, I think, from the core clubs and
Canberra Olympic.
Canberra Olympic has put in an application. I'm quite happy to declare that.
Queanbeyan?
Nothing from Queanbeyan, I don't think. Monaro, you mean?
Monaro, I beg your pardon.
I think it's a bit early for Monaro. If they're going to put in, they'll put in. But personally, I think it's probably a bit early. And they've got to look at the Brindabella experience. That when Brindabella came into the Women's Premier League, it was just too early for a top First Division team. They had good reserves and probably the 18s, but
they went in with their eyes wide shut.
Yeah, and they'll come back. They'll be ready in a couple of years. I guess the question marks are on clubs like Bell West and Canberra FC. I've heard some stories that, you know, there might be some change of mind about whether or not Premier League is the right place for Bell West. I'm hoping, again, personally, that they do continue because they're such a strong foundation club.
They had trouble, I think, through the season keeping their roster intact.
It's the under-18s that are the issue. Now, we're going to be taking the women's underage squad to 19, we'll make that move next year for the women's, and for the juniors and the men's. This fits within the national competition review.
Okay. Yeah.
FFA would like the age groups to be 19, 17, 15, 13 at the Premier level.
Mm.
So we're going to make the change for the women sooner than later because that suits certainly some of the clubs like ANU where their age of students is a little bit older. Mm. They struggled with 18s.
I certainly do, yeah.
Maybe Bell West, it might make it a bit more easier if they kept the core group of 18s they had this year and just padded them out with some older players. Western Creek's a bit the same in that sense too. But the criteria is a lot more expansive this year. The club must have teams in state league competition and they must have teams in a junior league environment to strengthen the capacity to field the three teams. Now, that makes it a bit tricky for ANU because they're a tertiary institution.
Yeah,
so to
have
a team in the junior league, they may require some special dispensation or a link with a school-based team like a Marici or a Darren
Marlin. That makes sense.
Yeah. Canberra FC also will need to meet that criteria if they're going to be re-nominating. And, of course, they don't have any girls in junior league and they don't have any girls in state league. They've only got the three Premier League teams.
Is that going to keep working for them?
That's their call. I would suggest it's probably a bit flaky. And they need to do more to develop the game for girls within their club and not necessarily take a team from another club and then call it Canberra FC.
Yeah. Well, didn't they have some sort of link to girls' grammar at one stage, or did that just sort of fizzle out?
It went off the agenda. Mike Shanahan was leading that quite a bit with girls' grammar, but it went off the agenda, I think, 2 years ago when they recognised that the best girls' grammar players are already playing in club
land. Somewhere else,
they're playing in different clubs.
The figures.
And maybe there was an issue about the cultural differences.
Right. Well, we're talking Women's Premier League here, and so we've got, what have we got? We've got
at ANU, Belconnen, Gungahlin, Bell West, Tuggeranong, Western Creek, Canberra Olympic if they come in. And then, of course, you've got Canberra FC, and have we covered them all? I mean, there's eight now.
Yeah, no, we've got them all. So it's Canberra FC is a small question mark there. Bell West is a question mark there in terms of their depth of their playing roster.
And Canberra Olympic is a possible new one.
Where are they going to draw their players from?
Madura.
Madura.
So they have their base in Madura.
Okay, so this like the men's, yeah.
Yeah, so the Madura has...
Okay, that's good.
They've got a very strong under-18s. The Canberra Olympic team was playing in the under-18 Division One this year for the women. They also have an old Canberra City team that sort of is a State League One that they want to bring back into the fold.
So they've got some feeder arrangements.
And they've got absolutely committed coaching staff there in Paul Macor and some of his colleagues. So they've got a good technical structure and a good base of juniors coming through from Majura.
Yeah.
And they recognise that probably in the first year their first division team might not be as competitive, but we thought the same with Gungahlin, and look at the terrific work that the Gungahlin club did in the women's league as well.
Yeah, they impressed me. They impressed me on several levels, and one of them importantly was their back of house operation. They just got it organised and they kept it tight all season. I imagine that they'll just go from strength to strength now.
Yep. And once we make the decision on the composition, then people will know, well, is this club in? If a club isn't returning for either their own choice or because they weren't successful, then those players will look to go to other clubs. Personally, I think 8 teams is enough. I wouldn't want to see a 9-team comp, but there'll be other people involved in that decision. And in fact, some suggestions have also been, well, let's keep it at 6. And if it was concentrated into 6 clubs for the next 2 or 3 years, they play each other 4 times, that's 20 games. That could be very strong. But when they're ranked, all the clubs will be ranked across the criteria, so they'll be given points according to each of the criteria. And then, the points will be tallied and we'll take the best 7, the best 8. Basically, I think.
There'll obviously be some sort of cut-off or some issues.
We would go with 9. I don't think the strength is there for 9, but let's see what the applications come in and how well the clubs are committed. We may only get 7 or 8 applications. We might get some of the current clubs not renominating.
Yeah, well, I certainly hope to get 8 applications. I can see the attractiveness in stabilising, because there is the concern that do we have the playing strength, because all of those clubs are playing for go down into the current 18 arrangement. Well, there's more under 18 than there is 18. That's one of the characteristics of women's Premier League football. There's a lot of young players move through very quickly.
And we've got to do something to make sure that the transition from the junior league at 16, 17 into the women's league is as smooth and as transparent as possible, so they know they can jump into under-19s. And so we'll have a social division of under-19s as well as that premier division of under-19s, keeping them in the game. And then on the other side, of course, all of the rep squads, the boys 13s and 14s, did very well at national championships, played extremely well, finished second in each of their groups, I think. We've gone through the transition of the winter development program now into the summer development program. Yeah. And, of course, futsal. We finished the futsal winter league and we're now moving into massive futsal competitions. We've got over 200 teams in our social divisions of futsal.
That's north and south of the lake?
Capital Football runs the senior comps at 200 teams. You've got North Canberra and South Canberra running their junior.
You're talking 200 teams at the senior level?
At the senior level.
Wow.
Senior
I didn't realise it was that big.
205, I think, run through Capital Football.
Yeah.
And then you've got the junior competitions being run by North Canberra, South Canberra, and of course Boomerang's doing so well in the New South Wales.
Yeah, it's a multi-layered cake, this futsal, isn't it? It's just going gangbusters.
Well, we started the Premier 12s as well, the Junior Premier League. So we've got the men's and women's Premier League at the top end, and then
that's open competition.
Open competition. I think we've got 9 in the men's and 8 in the women's.
Yeah, the 5 games played last night. Good futsal.
Very good futsal.
Good futsal.
Look, we're a good futsal town. We've always done extremely well in futsal championships. And therein, lies the challenge for us in terms of selecting representative squads for the futsal nationals here in January. I admit there's been some concern about our decision initially not to have 2 teams in all divisions, but if the depth and the strength isn't there, then we're not going to field 2 teams. Most of the other states only do 1 team, 1 division. We have just agreed that there will be a second boys under 16 team. We had a number of parents concerned that you know, their boys had missed out and that there was sufficient quality to warrant a second team. So we have said there will be a second under 16 team.
Okay.
But, you know, we field something like 21, 22 teams
yep.
in futsal championships. Yep. That's a lot of teams. That's a lot of coaches. And you're spreading the quality, particularly when it comes to coaching, a bit more thinly if you've got that number. So,
well, that's certainly true because you've having coached it myself, you've got to give up a fair amount of your time and so have the parents and kids in order to be able to address the teams that you're going to meet and give a reasonable account of yourself.
Yeah.
But I think the capacity building in futsal is really useful at that 11 and 12 age group where, well, I look around and I think of the number of players I see playing at ACT or at Boomerangs and so, who started off in Colts teams. But they started off at 11s and 12s, so there's capacity there.
Well, I'm going to, you know, encourage our technical staff and the futsal staff to, you know, obviously work out the policy and the process for selecting futsal teams for the 2012-2013 championship. So we'll get through this championship in January with the teams that we've got there. Then we're taking advice from a range of experts and our constituents about what's the best model for futsal in terms of two teams, one team. I'm a bit like you, Peter. I think probably at the younger age levels, the sort of 11s, 12s, 13s, it should be two teams. And then we concentrate one team into all the other divisions. Futsal championships and the spread of the game across the country is much wider than it was 5 years ago.
When
we kind of put two teams in order to fill up the numbers.
Yeah.
We don't need to do that anymore, nor do we need to have the teams to as revenue raising. That's not our priority. That's not our focus. The futsal championships are cost neutral. The players pay to play, basically. But at the same time, we want to make sure that we concentrate the quality into the teams that we have, and that means the playing quality as well as the coaching quality, and not dilute that by, dare I suggest, giving people a bit of a go at playing in the championships.
Yes, I know what you mean. For those that perhaps haven't seen the Nationals, and they really should go and see the Nationals because it's a massive event. I venture to say it's probably one of the major revenue raisers on tourism in the year in the ACT.
Yeah, it's. I think at that time of year too, January, it does very well for the ACT economy. Not to the same extent as the Kanga Cup July, but certainly it's a big event, you know, logistically it's difficult to manage, but. You know, we're really pleased that FFA has, you know, shown its confidence in Capital Football in running the championships, and they will be here for the next two or three years. So that's been confirmed.
I think it's fantastic. But our problem really has been bridging that gap between our community futsal.
Yeah.
We've gone to Premier League, so we're trying to bridge, you know, shorten the distance across that bridge. And, of course, the Boomerangs now playing in the New South Wales Premier League have shortened it a hell of a lot more because we now have a group of teams and players who are playing at the top domestic competitive level in Australia. And I really encourage people to go and see that. I mean, it might get your head straight on what's in front of the players, because the best of the players, you'll see all those teams turn up in Canberra to play them. But you'll quickly see the standard that those. It's not just one club, but club after club after club is
best of the best.
Yeah,
they're
having a real dig, and you will see some of those players at the Nationals. And more importantly, for the coaches, that the coaches will come from those coaches you see there.
Well, I'm pleased to say that FFA are now working on a policy for futsal, and during the futsal championships we're going to take some lead and work with the FFA on hosting a forum at the back end of the championships.
That's a good idea.
For coaches and managers to come along and talk futsal and work out a strategic plan for futsal from the national level all the way through.
Yeah.
Including a proposal to resurrect the Futsal National League, the F League. There's a small East Coast sort of league that started last year, and we
that's
had
right.
a Canberra team playing in that, men's at the moment.
Yeah.
But the idea is to try and widen that to see what the interest is with the team.
It's a germ of an idea, isn't it?
It's returns to the halcyon days of the old National Futsal League when it was run by Australian Indoor Soccer Association or something like that. So
everything old is new again.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, for FFA at the moment, though, you know, they unashamedly say it's not a priority. Their priority is to really cement the A League, the Youth League, and the W League, and then they'll start to look at an F League.
Yeah, but look, it's a good idea to put a forum together like that, because you'll never have a better opportunity, or not Capital Football, but the FFA will not have a better opportunity than when all of these futsal people are in town.
Mm.
I mean, how would you get them together otherwise?
Well, that's right. I mean, the state federations are being asked to send a futsal expert, a futsal representative, to the championships and to the forum. So we will host a function and a bit of a gathering for those people, and then lead into the sort of the talk fest and the strategising for the way forward. Which kind of segues into also what we're doing with the coaching and the coaching ranks. You know, we've put on a lot of coaching courses this year. We have a priority to upskill football coaches. We're doing some work with futsal coaches as well. But we've got our ACT coaches conference later in November. It's already fully subscribed, but not very many people from Canberra. A lot of people coming from New South Wales to participate in the conference. So our technical director, Royston Thomas, is looking to keep 10 or 15 places now, add 10 or 15 places for Canberra coaches. This is part of the whole education of coaches, but it's also it also enables coaches to get points for their
accreditation.
So there'll be a lot of people in town for that. And you can be the first to hear it, Peter. I'm going to be welcoming April Heinrichs, who is a former US world champion and gold medal coach from the Olympic Games. April Heinrichs will be here in November, and she will put on a workshop with Jitka Klimkova, our Canberra United coach, on coaching female athletes, coaching female players. So that'll be a special invitation to a seminar. And we're looking at making that an all of sport.
She's a very substantial individual.
April Heinrichs is very impressive in terms of her qualification. She's now the head of the US women's technical program.
Yeah.
And so she'll be here for a week in November, and I'm going to put together the seminar on coaching female players.
Gotta talk to her.
You can do an interview with her. That'll be across, you know, this will be of interest to Kerry Graff and the Capitals, to the hockey people, to the cricket people, any people who are involved in at the top end, I suppose, our Premier League coaches, our women's scholarship coaches, across different sports as well, to come and listen to April and Jitka talk about their experiences in coaching female athletes and what the differences might be in dealing with women compared to dealing with juniors or men.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you've got a first there, a world first.
All right. But I wanted to just come back to futsal just for a second. We're jumping around, but it's a coherent subject. In terms of our futsal, we're trying to bridge this gap all the time between where we are at a community level and being as effective as we can be at the national competitive level. And we've taken those various steps at Premier League and Junior Premier League, Boomerangs and so on. Look, I don't mean this in a critical way, but one of the things that goes with those various initiatives getting off on the right foot is the simple process of coordination between each initiative for the same limited player base. Because they run over the same period of time, I think it's inevitable there's going to be clashes for the demands on some of those players. I guess that's part of the learning process.
It's an annual dilemma that we face when there is so much choice for players. So much choice, whether it's playing in the men's under-20s competition on the weekend and then trying to fit in some futsal yes. competition.
I saw quite a few of the same cast of characters last
exactly.
night.
So, but these, so we try and timetable our activities with all these things in mind. So, when are the junior futsal competitions being played? When are our senior futsal competitions? When are our rep programs for futsal? Yeah. When is our summer development program for the boys and girls starting at 10s through to 15s? Yeah. When's that happening? When are the men's masters? When are the men's 20s? When is the women's six-a-side? We've got ANU running eight-a-side, nine-a-side. We've got Tuggeranong doing six-a-side. We've got Gungahlin doing six-a-side. There are so many opportunities for young players and not-so-young players. And so we do our best to try and make sure that they don't clash, and Boomerangs is another level that now comes over that. But at some stage, we just can't avoid the clashes. I mean, we've also got people playing other sports at this time.
Cricket,
whether it's cricket, whether it's softball, swimming, all these other things. Yeah. And at some stage, people just have to make a choice. You know, they can't necessarily do all of the things they want to do. And communication with our technical staff, communication with our league managers is critical in this sense. And, you know, I know Roy has some pretty firm ideas about, you know, the players in his development squad. He's got the best kids, you know, in the 12s and the 14s program. He needs to see them over summer for extra development. His mantra is to get more players into national teams from Canberra, more players into ACTAS, more players into the AIS. And he's got a job to do on that side.
That's a serious objective in its own right.
Absolutely, and it's an FFA. You know, FFA needs to see better quality players at national team level.
Yeah.
And every state federation has a critical job to play in helping get better quality players to national teams.
And I'm not expecting you to say this, but I'll say it, if only because I got my ear chewed last night at futsal. Parents complain if we're not getting those outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you don't get these outcomes unless there is commitment and the discipline to...
It's really difficult, isn't it? Yeah,
it
is difficult. And so we've got to look at... So in a futsal environment, kids can play in a North Canberra competition, then they can play, if the timing is right, in a senior competition. Say I'm 16 or 17, that's a long time ago, but, you know, I could play in a junior environment, I can then jump in and play senior competition on a Friday night, I can play six-a-side on a Sunday night, I can, if I'm really, really good, I could also perhaps be in a Boomerang squad. But there's four things already in a futsal or in a six-a-side environment, without even thinking that if I was a you know, a Georgia Yeoman Dale at 16, 17, I can also be part of Canberra United, or I could be part of a women's development program. I mean, there's just so much choice.
Well, there is, and let me layer that cake a bit more. And people need to keep reminding themselves, we've got a limited player base here, and everyone wants all of these options to be made available, but at some point the rubber hits the road and you can't be in two places at once. You do have to give a commitment to something. With the greatest respect in the world to all the parents and players, the idea that you can have everything is just a nonsense.
And I think the other level that's going to come into play a lot more is the economic situation and parents and players needing to make a choice.
Everything
from
costs.
An economic point of view, it does cost. And we've already seen a little bit of a shift in some of our competitions. You know, people are having to, they can't necessarily do two or three things because it's not our fees as such, but it's the time and the cost to get to and from. Putting petrol in the car,
absolutely.
Getting the equipment, you know, maybe having to work and earn some money in a part-time job rather than going and playing sport.
Yeah.
That's an economic reality that we have to be conscious of all the time. So, again, that's a choice that people make. We don't force people to participate. We don't force people to join a club and do this and do that. It's their choice.
But in reality, you can't solve every problem either.
Well, not when I'm dealing with 18,000 players.
No, and indeed. But the next layer on these cake we're talking about, if we're just talking about futsal, we're talking about Boomerangs. Okay, those kids have got a serious competition, but they're going to spend half of the equivalent of half their season travelling to Sydney.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's an admirable situation and one that we need to respect and support, because they are making a personal commitment in many ways, financial, in time, in travel, training, staying at a competitive level that means that they're not going to be embarrassed when they go in against some of the Sydney teams or whatever. They are really working hard and the club management is working hard to provide Canberra players with that higher level opportunity through the New South Wales League.
They're obviously doing well. I mean, we've said they're doing well, but they're obviously stepping up this year, and they're at the senior level. They're not going too badly. They're not very far off the pace at the junior level, but they're now finding that next step up is serious stuff. Yep. They'll handle it well, but it'll take a year or so to get across that. But it's interesting because it's those same group, or a lot of those players, would see themselves as potentially ACT representatives, and we're willing to trial. But and the moment any of those are selected, we've got a development program or preparation for the ACT nationals going on, and those coaches will want those players at certain times. There's the natural tension. I think in these circumstances, flexibility is probably going to be the key to this, isn't it?
It is, and understanding that, you know, if they're already picked for a high-level team, then we will have some flexibility about the requirement to trial for an ACT rep team.
Yeah.
But the door isn't necessarily shut. Once, like, for example, once we announced the training squads for their rep teams, the door wasn't shut for others to still be looked at and considered.
Sure.
And it wasn't, you know, a special door that opened for some people who are involved in the Boomerangs not to trial. They still need to get along, and they still need to be benchmarked against those other players in that squad.
Yeah.
And that's where I think, you know, we've got a bit of a communication challenge that we need to inform people that, okay, so initial squads have been selected. They may include some people who didn't trial. But when those people come in, they will still be benchmarked against the others. And if they're not good enough, they're out.
That's fair enough. And we've also got the Junior Premier League and the Men's and Women's Open Premier League, and those competitions are running. And there's whatever training and organiser. So there's, I suppose, the point I'm trying to get across here is that there is no simple straight path here in futsal. It's multi-level, and there just has to be flexibility, you know, based on good decision making and fairness, but flexibility to see the commitments through, and with the objective, you know, at some point the objective for representing the ACT at the nationals will take primacy.
And this is, just to reiterate,
is that fair? I mean,
absolutely, this is our busiest time for futsal.
It's a shocker.
From probably 3 or 4 weeks ago, right now through to the end of February, it is. Our concentration is on futsal competitions, on futsal rep teams, on futsal national championships, and sitting around all that are a range of other programs that people can dip into and out of.
You have been listening to the Near Post Local on 2XXFM, where too much football or futsal is never likely to be enough. Football and futsal in the capital region. Go to the podcast for this program at www.nearpostlocal.blogspot.com. You will find a lot of interesting interviews and items there for the discerning football or futsal tragic. Enjoy your futsal and football. See you next time. Ta-da.